You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts, Jim and Bobby Bell.
And that was the Hot Texas Swing Band with Hot Texas starting us off tonight. And we have a full house. Who are our guests tonight?
Oh, wow. We have one of our favorite guys, Henry Park, film editor of True West Magazine. And our special guest tonight, Deborah Thomas.
Yes, and she'll be joining us. I think, Sam, you can bring her on the screen if you like. It's okay. We're happy to see her. Hey.
There you go.
And hello, Henry.
Howdy.
So Henry is the Western film editor for True West Magazine. We've known Henry for years and years and years, right, Henry? There's a portrait getting old somewhere. We stay looking exactly the same, I think.
Yes. Don't look in the attic. Yeah.
And you have some, I know, top of the news headlines about what's happening in Western film. Take it away, Henry.
Well, thank you. Good evening, everyone. I hate to say it, actually, but tonight's report on what's happening in the worlds of Westerns is going to be short, because whenever I go to my usual sources and search Western, all I'm getting is All Quiet on the Western Front. But one good piece of news, I can highly recommend The Old Way, Nicolas Cage's new Western and his first Western. It's a revenge story and grim at times, but with humor, and it's very well made. Anyone know who plays the grizzled bearded Civil War vet in the Outlaw Gang? Anyone heard?
No idea. Do you know? No idea.
Clint Howard.
Oh.
The little kid from Gentle Ben.
Oh.
Yeah. And now he looks like Abby Hayes. But it's more of a Will Gear or a serious Dub Taylor kind of a role, and he does it very well. It's his first Western since Missing, which is 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I just had a great time interviewing him about his Westerns for True West. Oh, and he and his brother Ron Howard collaborated on an excellent dual biography, The Boys, which I just highly, highly recommend. A few years ago, I did an article for True West about the 50th anniversary of The Wild Bunch and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which both came out in 1969, and were about the same people. I just found out that Jeff Mead, a very talented writer and a very scary actor, has written a new Western for The Asylum called Butch Cassidy and the Wild Bunch. I think it's in the can at this point. Back in 2010, he did a very nice, tough little Western for The Asylum, Six Guns. And I'm really happy that he's doing another and that The Asylum is making Westerns again, because that's the last one they've done.
Mm-hmm.
The director, Anthony Ferrante, is the man who directed Sharknado.
Okay.
Which, you know, is, I'm sure, the most successful film that The Asylum, with more than 150 movies, has made.
Oh, wow.
Jeff is playing Kid Curry, which is who Ben Murphy played on Alias Smith and Jones.
You
know, everyone realized that was a real person.
Mm-hmm.
And, do you remember who played Kid Curry in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid?
No.
Ted Cassidy, Lurch from the Addams Family TV series.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. Okay. Now, I don't know how many rendezvousers would like to invest in a new Western, but if you'd like to, martial arts movie legend Cynthia Rothrock is making one. It's called Black Creek. Its cast is going to include a lot of martial arts stars and actors like Kevin Sorbo. And she's got, is this perfect for a martial arts person? A Kickstarter campaign to help fund it. So check that out. Now I understand Bobby Jean, Jim, but you guys have some interesting news about the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival.
We do.
We
it's
do.
Back on.
Yes, after a three-year hiatus, it's back. Yeah. It's being reinvented somewhat. It will happen on Main Street, you know, our old stomping grounds where our store and such used to be. And sure. They're blocking Main Street. They've announced the wonderful entertainer lineup at the website, the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival website. And we're invited to come back and run the Buckaroo Bookshop. And so we are lining up our author guests, and next week we will announce them. We have most all of the spots filled, and everybody's very excited, Henry, to be, many of them are coming back and very excited. They've been holding that weekend date open for 3 years, you know.
I think that's where we actually met, isn't it? Buckaroo Bookshop.
It might have been through Courtney and Miles Swarthout.
Right.
Maybe. Way back, so. 2009, the first one, 2009.
That sounds right.
Could be. Yeah. So we're excited, and we're excited to be back in Santa Clarita, where, of course, we have so many wonderful friends, and it'll be wonderful to be back. Right. So, yeah. So thank you. So, Henry, yes. If anybody wanted to, you know, we haven't got the newest issue. We're not complaining. This is the January, February. No, the February, March.
February,
issue.
March. So that's the current one. As a matter of fact.
This is the current one. Okay.
Yes. And if you're looking for my article, there it is. Where's the camera? There it is.
All right.
I was going to say that that in that issue, I got to visit the Mescal movie set in Tucson, which was originally built for the movie Monty Walsh. Watched some of the filming of the new INSP Western Farhaven. And I got to interview stars Bailey Chase, who I think everyone remembers from Longmire, and A. Martinez, who everyone remembers from everything. And I've got four new pieces up on the INSP blog. My interview with Bonanza star Mitch Vogel, my interview with Death of a Gunfighter star Mike McGreevy, and my two-part interview with Rudy Ramos about the road from High Chaparral to Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I just got an email this afternoon from Rudy saying, quote, "Thank you for getting everything correct," unquote. So I don't mean to brag.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing. So where would people find you, Henry? You're staying with us for the show, but where would they find you?
Well, they will find me at www. that's because I didn't do my usual segue. You can read all about this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Excellent. Right. Thank you, Henry. And we're hoping that you'll come and stop by and see us in April.
Oh, I plan to.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Good.
But by the way, let me just throw in that the three people I was talking about interviewing, you know, that are up on the INSP blog are all going to be at Old Tucson, March 16th through 19th, for the first, hopefully, annual Television West Fest. So
fun.
You can meet them all there.
Very fun. Very fun. Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much, Henry.
Thank you, Bobby.
Now we're going to officially welcome. She's been with us patiently waiting and listening. There is no quiz on what Henry shared, Deborah, so you don't have to worry.
It's written
Deborah
later.
Thomas. This is our featured author guest tonight, Deborah Thomas. We're so delighted to have her. And Jim, you have a little something you...
I have a short bio. I'm sure that Deborah will fill in what I left out. Deborah Thomas is a Sarton Award winner for her debut novel, Loose, and the author of Josie and Vic, a novel to be released in April of 23. In other words, coming up next month. Mm-hmm. Originally from Binghamton, New York, she has lived in Southern California most of her adult life. A writer, teacher, and immigrant rights advocate, Deborah is a former Los Angeles Public High School English teacher and English as a second language instructor to adults over the world. Welcome.
Welcome. We're so happy to have you with us.
I am thrilled to be here. You guys are just such a delight.
Thank you.
Well, we read two books.
Yeah.
Jim, you read.
I read Loose, yes.
You read Loose, right? And of the beautiful Calla Lily on the cover. And then do you have a cover of Josie and Vic that you can share? Because I read the, you were so kind, you gave me the PDF because it's not out yet.
Yeah.
So this is Josie.
And yeah. And all my arcs ended up being sent to people to do reviews. So this
of course
is the best I can do.
Of course, we yes. And I think I see it on the wall behind you. Is the basic cover?
The wall.
Yeah. And that's the wall hanging
that was
for the cover. Well, we both enjoyed the book so much. And while Jim was reading Loose, he'd say, "Oh, wait, I have to read this to you," and I'd have to stop reading Josie and Vic, and I'd say, wait, just wait. And then he'd read something to me, and then we'd talk about it, and then I'd be reading, and then I'd say, oh my gosh, you have to read this, hear this.
You're not making this up, are you?
No, this isn't a show about fiction, no. So we both really, really enjoyed, and we're very eager to talk to you about both of these books. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about yourself, and then maybe go right into what inspired these two books?
Well, As Jim pointed out, I was an English teacher, but, well, originally I'm from Binghamton, New York, as he said, and I moved out here to Los Angeles in my 20s, and I was an RN then, and I worked at UCLA Medical Center, but I took fiction writing classes at UCLA's Writers Program because my real dream was to really study literature and become a writer. And so when my kids were little and in school, I went back to college and got a bachelor's and master's in English. And then I worked as an English teacher at James Monroe High School here in LA. And also English is a second language to adults from all over the world at many different places here in the Southern California area. And I've done that quite a bit off and on over the last couple decades. And that experience changed my life and led to my books. This was the mid-90s and around 2000 that I was teaching ESL, and most of my students were from Mexico and Central America. And so I would hear about their lives in their home country, why they left their homes, and no one leaves their home because they want to. There's always some pressure, some reason forcing them. And I learned about many of their journeys and their struggles here once they got here. But at the same time, I was reading in the LA Times week after week about the deaths in the desert. Now, this was around the time that the Mexican economy had plummeted and the peso was devalued, and many of our migrants were coming from Mexico. Now we hear about Venezuela and Haiti and Honduras. In 1980s, it was Central American refugees fleeing war. But at that time, it was many Mexican migrants coming. And our government responded with fencing, high-tech lighting, underground sensors, hoping to prevent them, prevention through deterrence, but it didn't work. What it did is it pushed them further east through deserts, and they were dying in the desert. Week after week, I'd read about this. So I became an immigrant rights advocate. I joined Amnesty International as a refugee and immigrant focus, and I had some incredible experiences. I toured a detention center, which was then at Terminal Island, just like a prison. I got to go with Border Links in Arizona to Nogales, Arizona, Nogales, Mexico. We went to both sides of the border. We spoke with all types of people, Border Patrol. We spoke with some poor residents living in squatters villages in Mexico. We went to shelters. It was quite an eye-opening, heart-opening experience for me. I also got, most importantly for me, I met Father Richard Estrada here in L.A., and he introduced me to Water Stations Project, which is now called Border Angels. And they are volunteers who go out and they leave water and they mark them with a blue flag in the hopes of preventing, many of these deaths. And so I had some incredible experiences. And I wanted to share what I learned. When the time finally came that I had time to sit down and actually write a novel, I knew I wanted to somehow write about my experiences and what I had learned. Because for me, I think fiction is the best way to reach people, to enlighten them, because fiction draws the reader in to experience what the character's going through. They can look through their eyes and experience. Or as Atticus Finch says in To Kill a Mockingbird, climb inside their skin and walk mm-hmm. around it. And so I wanted my readers mm-hmm. in Luce, which is a story about a young Mexican girl named Alma. Her father is a migrant farm worker who goes missing. And she and her sister decide to leave their home in southern Mexico and travel the length of Mexico, try to cross the border and see what they can learn about him. And so I hoped that my readers would, you know, get a different perspective. So that's Luce. That novel came out in 2020 during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I was quite worried about that. But fortunately, it did pretty well with good reviews and awards, as you pointed out. And now my new novel, Josie and Vic, which is coming out in a few weeks. I'm excited about it. Is about a sister and brother, Josie and Vic, and they had a very special relationship because when they were younger, their father abandoned them, and the mother had to work a lot, and Vic was like a second parent to Josie, and she adored him. Now, the novel takes place when they're in their 40s, decades later, and Vic experiences a terrible tragedy, and Josie leaves everything in the East Coast, comes out to Los Angeles to be with him and help him through this. And it's kind of about a fragmented family given a chance to reconnect. There are some issues that involve border issues as a small part of the novel. And so once again, I was kind of hoping to, you know, have my readers experience other perspectives, increase empathy about different topics, and, you know, deepen our humanity. That's kind of my hope.
Mm-hmm. There were, as Jim and I discussed both books, we found there were some interesting commonalities, whether they were intentional or not. Mm-hmm. There were some themes. And, you know, we did, you chatted with us the other day, but there was a theme that struck me this morning as I was thinking, the theme of home. What is home? What does it mean to all of the different characters? Home, in reading Josie and Vic, we have several residences, and we have characters that are really looking for home, trying to have that home. Vic has home and then has this tragedy that changes that perception of home. And I think you had shared about things from Luce that were the same as they're Alma, traveling, yeah. Alma yeah. traveling partly to find dad is kind of home. Did you, was that a theme that you?
Well, I think that's something we all experience throughout our lives. You know, where do we belong? You know, where is home? And it changes as our mm-hmm. lives change. Mm-hmm. I mean, even up to if you have a home and your children are gone and okay, now, you know, once they've gone, what's your home? But certainly in Luce, Alma is searching for her father, but she's also searching for where is she going to end up? Mm-hmm. Where's she going to belong? Mm-hmm. And will she find a home? And certainly in Josie and Vic, both of them. Josie, who's kind of in an empty nest situation, her teenage daughter Ellie has taken off and landed in Seattle, where she is a singer-songwriter. And for Vic, his home has been destroyed. And so they're both searching for where do they belong next. That's really what it is. Not so much home, but where do I?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Where do I belong? There's also, as you've touched on, there's the relationships of, you know, the fathers and mothers and family is very strong in both of these books.
Well, that's really what I like to write about are the relationships of love, whether it's family, whether it's a mother and daughter, father and son, whether it's a romantic relationship, whether it's the love of animals. I include animals in Josie and Vic. There's three horses in it, and they're actually horses that I've had over the past few years. I came to horses very late in life. I'm not someone who grew up with them. I was 50 when I had my yeah. first old horse. But I wanted to convey the love relationship of in all those different areas. And that's why I wanted the focus in Luce was Alma searching for her beloved father. Her father who believed in her. She wanted to be a teacher and he was devoted to making sure she stayed in school, which was very unusual for her community. Girls her age were often pulled out of school to work. And Josie's case, her father has abandoned them. And so there's a whole different dynamic there. So, and then there's the mother-daughter. Now Luce is Alma's daughter. That the name of the book is Luce because Alma is telling her daughter Luce the story, or the story she wants to tell her when she's older. And in Josie and Vic, there's Josie and Ellie, the mother daughter. So yeah, the relationships mm-hmm. within a family to me are what I like mm-hmm. to write about.
I know you want to ask that math question.
I know I want to say something about the trip first.
Well, that's fine.
We'll get into the homework situation here. You know, I looked on the map. Oaxaca, is that what we pronounce? How we pronounce it? Yeah. You know, it's 1,500 miles from the Nogales. And our people, they start out in a broken down truck, and then they start walking, and then they get a bus, and then they do some more walking, and then they ride what's called the beast.
Right.
And then they do some more walking, you know, 1,500 miles.
Just to get to the border.
These are three teenagers on their own.
Not at the border yet.
You know, this is a pretty scary situation. Yeah. Of course, I thought, you know, we had a little conversation. I thought, you know, there's places in this country, three teenagers walking by themselves would have a problem, too.
Right.
So, and the story is really, it's about finding their father. It's more finding their father than there is getting to this country. Even though that she needs to get to this country to find.
Right. To find dad.
Yeah. Now her father worked in the U.S. She doesn't come to get to the U.S. She comes to try to find him.
Find him.
But ends up finding a home in the U.S., so to speak, mm-hmm. to use mm-hmm. the word home. Mm-hmm. Where to mm-hmm.
You know, you tied in Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta. I thought that was kind of interesting because that was a big movement back in the 60s. The 60s, is that right?
Yeah, late 60s, 67, I think, yeah. Dolores Huerta is actually a character in the book. She read the novel, by the way, and gave it her blessing. Dolores is an inspiration for my character, Alma. She follows her over that year, and when Alma is struggling to keep going, Dolores has, in real life, had an aortic aneurysm, and Alma follows her recovery, and that gives her strength to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I got to think about this later, because we talked about this last night, and maybe this was the teacher in you, but we get homework assignments, you know, at the end of each chapter.
So there is a quiz.
Yes.
Well, there's math problems, believe it or not, in the novel. It was actually an assignment when I was writing it to break the form of the novel and to try to come up with some unique way. I was taking a class with Gail Brandeis, who's a wonderful writer and teacher of writing. And I remembered like Water for Chocolate by Laura Esquivel, where there were recipes in a few of the chapters and they had something to do with the chapter. And I thought, well, Alma wants to be a teacher, a math teacher. She loved math. And I put that in there because I wanted girls to say, you know, I can do math or I can do science. And so I decided it would be a fun thing for her to do. She ends up getting a journal on her journey, and she sits down to write a diary entry. But instead, she writes a math word problem. And there are 10 math word problems that have something to do with that particular chapter. And the answers are in the back. So, I didn't know how that would be received. And to my surprise, I've gotten a lot of great comments from people that they liked it.
I thought it was fun. But, you know, I used to take a lot of math in high school and college, as we talked the other night. And I forgot most of it. And I look at these problems and I said, you suppose I can do these? I'd say, you know, they're like fifth and sixth grade word problems. So I was afraid we had a couple of train problems. And I thought we were going to one
train.
Of those trains where this train's going this train. Way, this road, right. How long will it take for them to meet?
Knows, right.
That's funny. Henry, do you have any questions that you'd like to jump in before we take a quick break and come back?
Sure. Yes. Thank you. Struck by what you were saying, Deborah, about the influence on you of teaching English to non-English speakers from all over the world, inspiring you to do this. And I was wondering if you've had any contact with any of them who've had a chance to read any of your books.
Actually, it was one of my high school students who read it. Uh-huh. Not one of my ESL students, but it was probably the most moving response I've gotten from anyone. She said when she first started reading it, she wondered, who was I to write this and what did I know? And as she started reading, she got drawn into it because she saw herself as Luce and her mother as Alma. And by the end of the novel, she asked her mother questions about her mother's journey from El Salvador, which is even farther, Jim, to travel. Yeah, and she found out things about her mother's experience that stunned her. And she never would have asked if she hadn't read the book, she said. And that just touched me.
That's the reason you write, isn't it? That's the reason you write. Well, we're going to take a very quick break so that our listeners and watchers can find out where to get this book. It is available on the OutWestShopBookshop.org page. And Sam is going to tell you a little bit more.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer with special guest Deborah Thomas and our old friend Henry Park. Where do we want to go now?
Yes, we're going to get right into a little bit more about Josie and Vic. This is a book coming out April 11th. Yes. It was an honor, Deborah, to be able to read it in advance. Really, really delightful. And I, as I said earlier, I enjoyed it very, very much. You start the book out talking a little bit about Pangaea. And I, as a reader, I don't do any research before I read. I don't do any prep. I hadn't been to your website. I didn't know anything. I'm just a reader. So when I read the opening little bit and I thought, okay, she's setting me up for an experience. How interesting. So tell us about Pangaea. There's not a spoiler alert here. It's right in the beginning of the book. Tell us about Pangaea and what inspired you.
Well, the truth is, this novel began with a short story that I wrote decades ago, and it's actually the second chapter that you read about a sister and brother, and the brother's getting ready to go to Vietnam, and the young sister is devastated. Now, she loves geology. Now, here I am again wanting the girls to say, I can do science. She loves geology, and she has just read about Pangaea, and Pangaea is our supercontinent that was all one landmass. We were all connected. And then it broke apart with plate tectonics into our different continents. And she feels like her world is pulling apart. And just like she studies, seeing geologists and paleontologists chipping away at a mountainside to understand our past, she wants to understand her past. So I took this idea and I wanted to bring it, you know, these two characters, I love them. And I wanted to bring them into this new novel that I wanted to write about a fragmented family, given a chance to reconnect. And so I was calling it The Promise of Pangaea. That's what I wanted to call the novel. But my publisher wasn't sure that that word would, you know, work well, that people might be turned off by it. And she was right. Even my cover ideas, maybe a little. So we went with Josie and Vic because that's what it's about. Yeah, it's about the two. And now, so the whole concept of, you know, pulling apart, but you know, we live in a sphere. And so those continents that have broken apart are moving back towards each other, maybe one day in a new form. And that was my hope with the family. Could they connect despite their differences? Because differences don't go away. You know, can we connect with those we don't necessarily agree with? And find some common ground. So,
They are a remarkable couple. There's, let's see, the book opens. Josie is 42. Mm-hmm. They have 7 years between them. Something like that. And they've been very close since they were kids. There was a scene when Josie is young and he brings her National Geographic magazines. And I surely remember we had a couple of older relatives in our family. We had one, my uncle Bob, I think he had every issue when you went into his little house, it was national. You know, they were everywhere.
right.
And I thought that was so wonderful. He was always thinking about her. They're very special for brother and sister. Very mm-hmm. special relationship. The idea again of fathers in this book becomes very clear. We have Vic, of course, is a father. We have Ellie, Josie's daughter, who has a father through her mom's marriage, who really raised her, and then she's looking for her biological father. That's a very interesting. What made you kind of think about all of the fathers are in this story in mm-hmm. several different ways?
Uh-huh. Well, I don't know that I so much planned it out. I knew that I wanted Josie at a young age to discover passion. And then, you know, the guy in her life goes and she finds out she's pregnant and she ends up having the child. But then she falls in love with someone and marries and he adopts Ellie. And so obviously I had to bring the idea of, you know, Ellie, because when Ellie grows up, she's going to want to know. And they told her from the beginning. So, I mean, it wasn't like I planned out, I want to do a father thing here, that it just organically happened. So, but yes, it's interesting because then when Tony, Vic and Josie's father, comes back into the picture, and Josie has a lot of anger and does not want to meet with him, but Ellie wants to meet her grandfather. So it made for some very interesting mm-hmm. Character conversations where they took over. We talked mm-hmm. about that a little bit in our mm-hmm. conversation, mm-hmm. where the characters kind of took over, and it was delightful to see where they went.
Yes, and you seemed to be happy with the decisions they were making about where they wanted to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You never really said no.
I always trust my characters. They've been right.
Tell us about, you mentioned it a little briefly, but they're such wonderful characters. Tell us about Maggie and Foxy Lady, and then tell us about the horses.
Okay, well, I Josie has horses, and they were, as I said, my beloved horses that I wanted to write them into it because I wanted people to see the special relationship people have with horses and how they have distinct personalities. And so they're a small part of it. You know, you see them a little bit throughout. And then, of course, she leaves them with her equine veterinarian back home because she's in Los Angeles for quite a period of time. And, of course, she and the equine veterinarian very slowly begin to have conversations, whether it's emails or phone, and we begin to see a relationship possibly develop with them. And now Ellie's Siberian Husky, Maggie, I think dogs are, and cats, but so much with dogs, they really can open our hearts to tenderness, even to the, you know, the most curmudgeonly person. And so I wanted to bring that love of a dog in and what it can do, the healing it can do, and even the way it can help people come together.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a friend recently who got a kitten, and that kitten has helped bring family members together. And I just think that's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens with Ellie and Josie and Maggie.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the scenes with Maggie, when Maggie is first introduced. We want you listeners and watchers, you need to buy these books. We don't want to tell you so much, like some movie trailers tell you so much. It's like, why go to see the movie? We don't want to tell you so much. We want to tease you with things that we enjoyed so that you will want to go to have the full experience.
Well said.
Walking in the skin of these wonderful characters that Deborah has created, and interesting situations that these characters find themselves in, which are, you know, part of life. Mm-hmm. Also interesting that you introduced the Day of the Dead.
Yes, the custom of Day de los Muertos. Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to share a lot of the different the blue flags and the water stations, mm-hmm. a lot of those different things, as well as the customs that would be celebrated, because Vic's wife was from Mexico. And so that's kind of woven in that mm-hmm. particular mm-hmm. custom. Yeah.
And it's really, it's very warm. It's wonderful the way that scene is woven in. We came from the East Coast, from New England to California in 91 and didn't know anything about the Day of the Dead. And I remember being in a wonderful a folk art shop and seeing all these characters. And it's like, what's going on here? And was told a little bit about it. And then I was a volunteer at the Autry Museum. And at that time, during the time of the Day of the Dead, they always had an altar, and they had, you know, a family created that. And so I began to understand, and, you know, it's wonderful. And I was so delighted to see it in the book, and
it's how a beautiful celebration,
how beautiful it was. It's yeah. treated. Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
It's not so much of, well, obviously there's mourning involved, but you know, they celebrate, and mm-hmm. it's a joyous occasion of people getting together with food mm-hmm. and all the colors and all the things that they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you want to read something?
Yes, I'm prepared. I'm going to read the very opening, just a couple paragraphs of Josie and Vic to give a sense of the novel. City of Angels, January 2001. The whole novel takes place in 2001. Josie. Vic had always been her hero. Before his work with immigrants and refugees, even long before Vietnam, Josie remembered well how her big brother, with his boisterous laugh and vibrant spirit, would bound into their tiny house in a cloud-covered corner of upstate New York, and within seconds, their mother would actually hum, quietly and only a few notes, but still, it was the promise of music. Now, calla lilies in hand, Josie hurried through the maze of hospital corridors with the same ease and sense of purpose as the medical staff she passed. Nodding to the ward clerk at the desk, she turned into the second room on the right and was relieved to find no other visitors. With a grateful sigh, she sank onto the bedside chair and reached for her brother's hand. Vic, she whispered, trying not to disturb this moment of peace, yet wanting him to know she was there. He didn't stir, so Josie sat for a moment with her nurse's eye, noting that his color was good, his skin warm and dry, and the urine in his Foley bag was a clear yellow. All good signs. Perhaps she could take him home by the weekend. Home, she thought with a shudder. That word had changed for both of them with one chilling phone call. For Vic, home would never be the same, for he had just lost his entire family, his wife and two children in a tragic accident. For Josie, home had always been the same town in upstate New York for her entire 42 years, but at least for a while, several months, perhaps a year, she'd be living with Vic in Canoga Park, a small section of the sprawling metropolis of Los Angeles. And one thing that I, besides the theme of connection that I talk about, of wanting to you know, bring people together, is also the idea of our human spirit, how even in tragedy, even in great loss, even while suffering, I'm just amazed by the resilience of the human spirit. I think of friends struggling with cancer. I think of people mm-hmm. whose children are ill. I think of you coming.
Yeah. Yes.
It's just so beautiful how people can suffer and the love of others that come to support them can help them move forward, and people can find purpose and love mm-hmm. even because of great sadness. Mm-hmm. So although my novel may sound depressing, oh my gosh, it's about a guy who lost his family who wants to, it's beautiful. There's love and hope and laughter in it. And there's a wonderful feeling by the end.
Mm-hmm. And I think the book cover, your choice of colors and such for the book cover is really ties into what you just said so beautifully. You want to take a moment and just tell us a little bit about the story behind the book cover?
Right. Yeah, I wrote an essay about the story behind my cover. Usually when your publisher might ask, if you're lucky, what ideas do you have for your cover? For Loose, I knew what I wanted, a blue cover with a white calla lily, because Alma carries a little box that's blue with a white calla lily on her journal, on a journey. Right. Now for Josie and Vic, I didn't know, because I kept thinking of Pangea, maybe there'd be some kind of a cover with Pangea, you know, but then again, who's going to pick up a book that would look like a science book? So so the design team came up with some beautiful ideas, but a lot of them had palm trees and winding roads by the beach, which, as beautiful as they were, I had talked about darkness to light, and they had worked with that a little bit, and they were lovely, but none of them grabbed me, and I didn't know what to do. And then a friend of mine, Barbara Craig, who is a quilt artist, she posted that a number of quilt wall hangings that she made. And one of them I just loved. It's right there. I love the colors. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of Guatemalan fabrics. And I loved it. And I bought it and hung it on my wall. And then I was reading Anne Patchett's essay about her cover stories, the writer Anne Patchett. Mm-hmm. And she was struggling to come up with an idea for her cover. And a friend gave her a painting. And she looked at it and she said, "Sometimes the world hands you exactly what you need when you need it." And the minute I heard that, I went, "The wall hanger." And so I asked my publisher, "Do you think we can do this?" And she said, "Well, you've got to get permission." Well, my friend said yes, but we have to find out who made the fabric. I found out Hoffman Fabrics here in Southern California made it. And they were wonderful. They were so gracious. We came to a very nice agreement, and they gave us permission to use that for the cover. And there it is.
And there it is. Yeah.
Absolutely love. I love, you know, the light coming out of the darkness.
Mm-hmm. That's a good cover. We like that cover.
Yeah, we like that cover. Henry, what do you think? Do you like that cover, Henry?
Oh, I think it is a real eye grabber. I like it very much.
Oh, great. Yeah. Oh, I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. Henry, sure. Do you have a question?
Yes, Henry.
No, I don't.
Okay.
We just want to make sure we ask.
I just was, Deborah, I've been so drawn in by what you've been saying. I was listening instead of trying to think of a question.
That's okay.
That's all right.
That's okay. You referred to yourself as an organic writer a couple of moments ago. Do you have a tip? Do you have a tip for new writers or for
actually,
writers? That, yeah.
For any writer, no matter what you write. And when I say organic writer, I'm not so much a pantser, but I kind of know what I want to write and where I want to go. But I just trust that if I sit down and start writing, it will come. It will. And in fact, I'm working on a novel now about a young woman who gets involved in wild Mustang rescue. And I've been doing so much research, 2 weeks. And what am I going to do? Where's she going to go next? What's going to happen? And I wasn't writing. And I got mad at myself. And I said, all right, tomorrow you're going to sit down and you're going to write one paragraph. What happened in that next paragraph? And I sat down and it came. And then another one and another one. And a character materialized. And so much comes from our unconscious or wherever it is. I can't begin to understand it. I just know that if I sit down and I'm disciplined and persistent, it will come.
It'll come.
Mm-hmm. That's my advice. You just have to, you can't wait for the muse and inspiration, you know, just start writing and see what comes out.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't work, go back and try again.
Do you have a working title for it or is it too soon?
Well, actually, I might call it The One Who Sings. It's based on Ellie.
The songwriter singer. Yes.
20 years later, she's 38 and she's leaving Seattle because of the lockdown, COVID lockdown in 2020. And she thinks she's going to drive east to her mother's cabin in the woods in upstate New York, but she gets a detour to the Pryor Mountain Wild Mustangs.
Oh.
And she's going to meet people and go in an entirely different direction. And there's a beautiful poem, and I wish I had it in front of me, by Wendell Berry about the journey. It's something about, you know, the journey that's encumbered is the one who sings, or the stream that's encumbered, it's the one who sings. So, and since she's a singer, I may call it that. Otherwise, I'm referring to it as Ellie.
Well, that sounds like a really wonderful read and also kind of a hot topic. Anything to do with Mustangs, certainly in the last few years of my life with another radio show, we have lots of guests that are involved with Mustangs in a variety of different ways. So when you told me you were working on a book about wild horses, I'm like, okay, who can I put her in touch with?
Well, let me say, very interestingly, the similarities I'm seeing between all the controversy surrounding this and the wild Mustang rescues, the BLM roundups, all of the advocates versus the there's so much anger. It gets really ugly. And it reminds me of the whole immigration. Yeah. You know, the horses shouldn't be on that land. They're eating there. You know, they're destroying the land. Well, no, it's the cattle that are destroying the land. Right. No, it's not. You know, everyone's arguing back and forth who belongs where, who has a right to be there. And I'm just stunned sometimes when I read comments that remind me of things I've read about undocumented immigrants in our country.
Mm-hmm. So, it's going to be great. Oh, it's going to be great. I already know. I want to be an advanced reader when it's ready.
Okay, all right. But I'm taking my time on this one. I'm not under any pressure. I'm just going to research and see where she ends up and what happens.
Yeah.
But I'm
where can people find you and follow you and so forth, Deborah?
Well, everything is Deborah, D-E-B-R-A, Deborah Thomas, author, because there's a famous Deborah Thomas figure skater.
Yes, there is.
And so I couldn't get that website or anything. So it's DeborahThomasAuthor.com is my website. Deborah Thomas, author on Facebook and on Instagram. Deborah Thomas, author at Gmail is my email. You know, I'm not trying to be, you know, Deborah Thomas, author. It's just that I had to do that because of a more famous Deborah Thomas.
I got it. I know I have one more question. What's the best financial investment you've made in your literary career?
Well, I guess I'd have to say She Writes Press. She Writes Press is a hybrid press. It's a woman's independent press. And without them, I would probably still be searching. I mean, initially I had an agent when I had an early draft of Luce. I was calling it Searching for Dolores, and it made the rounds of big houses in New York, and a couple of big names held on to it for a few months, and I was thrilled. And of course, when they started narrowing down their list, it was cut. Mm-hmm. And so I went back to the drawing board and revised. And when I came back to start looking again to publish it, Gail Brandeis again told me about She Writes Press, this highly respected independent press where you put a little money up front to help get it, but you get a bigger percentage of the royalty, traditional distribution, and a wonderful sisterhood of writers, which in so that's been my best investment.
That's a great answer. Yeah.
Sisterhood of writers. A few of us have gotten together and formed a writing critique group, which has been extremely helpful.
Really, really great.
I stayed away from that for a long time. I was one of those quiet writers that didn't show anybody their work, but I've learned so much from working with them. So,
well, we appreciate you both being with us today. Once again, the one that I can hold up is Luce. Why don't you hold up Josie and Vic?
There you go.
With our guest tonight, Deborah Thomas. Of course, for all things Western film and Western TV and really the magazine, all things Western, True West Magazine. Speaking of Westerns, next week, our guest, Henry, you know this gentleman very well. We have Eric Heisner with us next week.
Oh, lovely.
And we're not sure. I'm reading this one. Jim will probably read this one. Above the Llano and Melody Groves just reviewed this in the newest issue of True West Magazine. And then this one is Citation for Murder, a neo-noir comedy, and it's actually quite fun. So Eric will be with us next week. And do you have a quote?
We do have a quote. You know, and this is from Deborah Thomas's book. Luce is from one of the characters, the teacher, Alma's teacher. And it actually kind of ties in with Alma's travels, but also with tragedy in Senorita Lopez's life, too. Have no regrets. No regrets. I now know that no matter what path you take, there will always be regrets. Always. For what you did, for what you didn't do, for what you should have done. There's no escaping that fact. It's how you live with the regrets that determines your life.
Yeah. Thank you all for being with us. If you've been listening or watching, we so love that you were with us today. If you pick up the show 6 months from now, welcome to the show. We will catch you again next week. Same time, same station. when it's always
a great day
out west.
You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.